Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Welcome to Colors of the Dark. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry, and with me is the Kane. Wait, what was that?
I said Dead by Dawn.
Oh, I didn't even hear that. It just completely stroked out. But I'm glad you're here and not Dead by Dawn. So we are just going to jump right in because we saw a bunch of really fun stuff this past 2 weeks, but we got to go see Evil Dead Rise together.
Which took us a while to get to it compared to everyone else was seeing it. We had life events taking...
It took like 4 days.
That was the only movie this year where I wanted to see it opening fucking night because I was so jazzed.
It opened on a Thursday and we saw it like Monday or Sunday. And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe
We're bad people.
4 days, Elric, right, 4 days because we had stuff going on. You had like graduation and
anyway,
shit,
it was so, an epic fail as movie fans. So,
you know, I have been so shocked by the bad reviews of this one.
I haven't seen any bad reviews.
Oh my God. I've seen people be like, oh God, this isn't Evil Dead. Why is the whole movie inside? And I'm like, I loved that. So this is Evil Dead Rise is set almost entirely, except for the cold open, which is set outside. Most of the movie is set in a high-rise apartment building. And it spends the majority of the time focused on the parking garage, one particular apartment in the hallway that all these apartments are on, and the elevator. There's a really good elevator scene. And I thought it was absolutely amazing. This was so wild. There were cringy moments. There were moments just kind of like the 2013 one where you feel the pain. It captured that where I had these moments throughout the whole thing.
Incredible gore.
Kids die. Like, I don't want to pull any spoilers there, but like it definitely, because you are dealing with a whole apartment building, you know, you always think like, you know, the kids are protected. No, just everybody's fair game in this bastard.
Directly ties to our topic that we'll be doing in the second half of the show, which is kids in peril. This is a great kids in peril and motherhood and all sorts of crazy stuff, but it's for a mainstream movie, which is what it is. It is playing in mainstream movie theaters to packed audiences. It's got to be one of the most fucked up movies to play to mainstream. Because if you go to Terrifier 2, you've gone for that reason. You know what you're in for. So I don't count that in the same way. That's somebody seeking out that experience. I think Evil Dead Rise, anyone who isn't paying attention, a teenager who might not even be that into horror, could go, oh, cool, a new horror movie. And it's fucking crazy, some of the set pieces in this. What I liked most about it, and this isn't just because of the high rise, I think it's just the kind of movie it was. I just like that it felt as close as I've ever felt to a demons movie. And I love demons. I've often thought kind of like, why has that not become the big, you know, redo franchise? Because they're so scary in movie theaters. And of course, the second one isn't a high rise, but that's not the reason. It's the way the horror is treated. It felt more in line with demons and the killer than it did in Evil Dead at times. And I don't give a shit if it breaks from some of the, if certain things are not the same as Evil Dead, that they're the most fun parts were the parts that weren't like the other Evil Dead movies. Like the parts where they bring back, you know, a certain book gag, or if they bring back, like, you know, that stuff's fine because they have to do service to, but I've already seen that through five movies, right? It's a blast. It's the first horror movie I've seen this year that I would want to see a second time in a theater. Like, it's the first time I've seen something where I'm excited to, you had to go to the bathroom one time, so there's one little bit you missed that I want you to.
I know that was painful, yeah. But I had that bucket of diet ginger ale.
It's a good reason to see it again.
Choice, I know.
But we highly recommend this one for a real hard that goes hard. Lee Cronin, I think, knocked out of the park, and all the cast was really good too. Like, I really liked the central character. You know, I think the characters could have been a little deeper. That's probably my only flaw, is that like I don't get to really know the character. Like, they're well acted, but I don't know much about them.
To be honest, like original Evil Dead, you knew nothing about the characters.
But that was the 80s, man. We could get away with that then. It's a little harder.
No, because even like the 2013 one, you might have gotten like, you know, okay, she's an addict and they're trying to get her out of it. But there was not heavy amounts of character.
Yeah, it's probably some on par with this one, but it did feel like I felt like I knew their situation a little better. But again, that's a minor critique on these kind of things. Like, you know, because to me, this did all the things I want from a horror film. So I was totally satisfied.
Excellent. Well, I am going to take us over to one that I absolutely loved. This one of my students recommended this to me, and it was very much in like a, how have you not seen this way? Because this has been out for a couple of weeks now. This is The Unwelcome, or it's just called Unwelcome. Drop the Unwelcome. Mm. It's currently on Amazon. It's got Shudder logos on it, so I have to assume it is eventually going to Shudder, but it's an Irish film. Mm. So right now it's just on Amazon and you pay like your $5.99 and get to watch it. But yeah, it's Irish. This is the same director from Grabbers, which was like a guarantee immediately that I was going to love it because I loved how hilarious and big and bonkers and wild Grabbers was. The setup of it is we start with this young couple and they're in a flat in a very sketch neighborhood in London. And we find out that they're pregnant. And then something happens and there's a home invasion and they both get really, really hurt and they're suffering from PTSD from it. So they decide he has inherited this house from his aunt in the middle of the Irish countryside in this super small town. And they're like, you know what? No one, we're never going to be subject to this violence again. We're moving to this super small Irish countryside home that aunt has left them. And they get there and there is one rule and he remembers it from his childhood and all the townspeople are very much like, no, you have to do this. There's this weird gate in the backyard that leads to this like sectioned off piece of forest and you can't get into it. And everybody's like, don't go in the gate and you have to leave a blood offering every night. And she's like, what do you mean blood offering? And they're like, you have to leave a piece of liver for the little people. They call them the red caps, but they're like the little people. And you get the idea that it's like what we associate with leprechauns, but they call them red caps in it. Mm. And everybody in town, especially the aunt's best friend, is like obsessed with this. Like you're still leaving the offering for the little people and everybody believes it. And that's as far as I will go. I will say this gets super gory, super wild, hyper real. They filmed the entire thing, all of the outside stuff on a set. So it just feels super fairy tale-ish, trippy, bizarre. Like it's got an interesting color palette to it. There was so much about this I love. I read an interview with the director where he talked about how he shopped it around as Gremlins meets Straw Dogs. And that is the absolute best comps I could think for this movie.
I saw it when you reviewed it. I haven't seen the film. You reviewed it. And then I looked and our friend Dick Grinnert reviewed it. And he wrote, it's Straw Dogs meets Darby O'Gill and the Little People or whatever. It's called The Irish.
It is.
And that's pretty funny to me because
it's wild. And I had a blast with this movie. So I watched this last night, super late. And I, as Elric knows, I had like food poisoning yesterday and I was skeptical if I was even going to make it partway through. And I watched the whole thing and I was like smiling, just elated the whole time. So this was a trip. This is Unwelcome, currently on Amazon, but I have a feeling it will eventually end up on Shudder. We'll see. And I know there's a Blu-ray coming out as well.
Yeah. Okay, cool. No, I was curious about that one, so I'm glad you saw it. Yeah, we have a few here. So this next one isn't horror at all. I would call it hard, like completely science fiction. And I know sometimes we're like, oh, but it's kind of horror. No, this is science fiction. But the reason I'm bringing it up here, it's probably the best movie I've seen this year. And so I really want people to see this because it is a super indie film. And this is The Artifice Girl, directed by Franklin Rich. Now, I don't want to say much about it because I knew nothing except that I assumed it was about AI. That's all I knew, like because of the title. And I sat down to watch this movie, which could also work really well as a play. It's three acts and each one's are like basically three scenes is the whole movie. And so each one is about 30 minutes. And the thing that most blows me away is that this is the guy's first movie, Franklin Rich's first film, but he's also one of the stars of it. And when I looked up the actor and found out this is his first film as an actor, that might be more impressive because the guy is so freaking good. I felt like I'd seen him in 20 TV shows. I was like, oh yeah, it's that guy from all those TV shows. And maybe he has been a TV show, but on Letterboxd, he's only done this one movie. And I was like, that's fucking crazy because he's so good. Anyway, I'll just give you the basic setup. He A guy is in an FBI-type room with two agent-type people. I won't say exactly who they work for. They are interviewing him, asking him his handle online, asking what he does. And he talks about how he worked on some movies, creating like, you know, recreating a dead actor for a movie like you saw in Star Wars or something like that. And, that, you know, so he's clearly got skills. He's very antisocial, very awkward. And they keep interviewing him. And then it becomes clear that they have seen his name, if he is the handle that they think he is, they've seen his name pop up in chat rooms for underage sexual kind of stuff. And so he is like being tracked. And then we learn pretty quickly that these people working here work for agencies who crack down on sexual predators. And so you're like, oh, interesting. And then they start keep asking him about his handle in the first one. And he's very reticent to say, and it's about a profile that they have been getting information. Somebody's been feeding them information that's actually been leading to lots of arrests, and they believe it has something to do with him. It's hard to talk about this movie without giving it all away, but the first act leads to the discovery of something he's been doing that leads to years later, and the second act is years later, and they've come a long way. And then the third one, all I'll give away, because just in case this isn't hooking people, because I'm really trying not to spoil the feeling I had of discovery, but I will tell you, the same actor who's like, he's like 30 in the first story, in the last segment, he's played by Lance Henriksen right now. And it is one of the, it is, if this is one of the late things that Lance gets to do, because he's, you know, by this, obviously fairly old, he's so, it's such a juicy, good actual role for him. And it made me so happy to see him get something with, you know, real emotion to it. And man, is it freaking interesting. Like, it just, it's very much centered around our current things that we're just starting to head towards, right, with AI. Mm-hmm. But it's doing it in a way that is very palpable and emotional, because it's connected to what I was talking about before, which is like online predators and stuff. So that's all I'm gonna say. The fact that this is, I think, the only film, I think this and How to Blow Up a Pipeline are only two films I've seen this year that I've given 4 stars. So they were like, they stood out.
Wow.
It's just a really good, it won't be for everyone because it is very talky, but it's fucking great.
I saw this title and immediately assumed that it was about like an artificial girl, like something that, you know, we've seen before where it's like an AI girl or something.
There could
like
be
that.
Elements of that I'm skirting around some stuff. But what I will say is what's interesting, because I think Ex Machina is a bit of a masterpiece, but that's this like very visual film. This one gets to the ideas of some of that same stuff better than Ex Machina did. Ex Machina might be a better movie because it's just like made so well, but I think this, the ideas in this are stronger. I think this is a really strong, like what we're going to be grappling and thinking about. I don't even want to give any more away, because it's just, it was such a fun movie to like go in knowing nothing except that it was probably going to be pretty good, and it was great. So that's Artifice Girl. I believe Aaron Kuntz is one of the producers on this.
Oh, is that through Paper Street?
I don't know if that's, it's through awesome. Them or not, but he definitely was one of the producers. So, because I saw him post about it after I'd seen it. And so I was like, oh, congrats, because this really is a gem. So
that's cool. Okay, I'm going to kick to one that I know you watched as well, that was not exactly my cup of tea for the whole thing, but I liked parts of it. And that is The Tank.
Yeah. So, okay. On the theme of New Zealand ploitation, we forgot to mention that I knew like halfway through, I turned to you and I'm like, with Evil Dead Rise, I'm like, this has to be filmed in New Zealand, because these guys are definitely Maori, all the extras. And of course it was. And then The Tank is the same, because he's a New Zealand director and the lead actress is definitely Maori. And so when I was watching, I was like, okay, more New Zealand ploitation. And I only say New Zealand ploitation because if these movies were set in New Zealand, I wouldn't feel that way. But when it's America and The Tank, I wish The Tank was set in New Zealand. I don't, for me, it doesn't need to be set in Oregon or wherever. It's like, no, make it about where it's from, you know?
I felt like it would have more appeal to the location if it was set in New Zealand.
I think so.
The setup of The Tank is, and this sounds strangely familiar to the unwelcome, that a couple that is really trying to get out of the city inherits this mysterious abandoned property. Instead of it being in the Irish countryside this time, it is a coastal property that is like this massive beachfront cottage in Oregon or Washington. It was supposed to be Pacific Northwest. And that was the most unbelievable part, because it was massive, like beautiful. They own like acres upon acres of beachfront property, and nobody has ever wanted to live there. And they get there and they move in and they start fixing it up and making it look pretty. And they discover that there is this giant water tank in the backyard. And he dives into it looking to see what's going on. He's trying to get the water back up and working. And he realizes that the water tank has this like cave behind it that it kind of goes back underneath the house.
I think they cite at some point there was a massive earthquake in the region.
Earthquake,
so it's probably like Piranha, like where the thing opened up, I'm sure.
Yeah. And then it becomes a creature feature. And I will say, I loved the creature. I loved this creature. I have never seen this creature before. It goes full aquatic horror.
Designed, by the way, by Richard Taylor of Weta. So the same guy does all the Lord of the Rings stuff, the actual creature. And I think that was one of the high points for sure. It was like,
yes. Where this movie lost me is there was some significant, I'll call them exposition dumps, where like character shows up midway through the second act that we've never met before and has a 5-minute monologue where they just dump all the exposition. That, and in between it, like there just wasn't a lot happening. It was watching people renovate a house kind of slowly. And so this one, it was a little too slow burn for me, but then in the third act, I loved the monster.
It's so interesting.
What do you think?
Well, no, probably similar, but like what's so interesting is like something like Kids vs. Aliens is only, I think, 75 minutes. This film is like just under 2 hours probably. And it felt, so what I did notice, and I don't always notice time beats and stuff, but on this one, I looked at a certain moment, I looked at the clock to see, because it was like they just got to the house. This house they're inheriting, in other words, where the horror would kick in. And it was 38 minutes. And I literally looked at the screen. I was like, this should be 15 or 12. Like literally, you could have just gone here at 15. And the movie, that's where the movie, it's front end. It's not even slow burn. It's like beyond that almost. Like it's just front end truncated. But if this movie was 75, 80 minutes, I bet you it would be a complete banger, because the actual effects are really good. The characters are, you know, it's a nice family setup in this house. He's received the house because his mother was trying to hide this from him while he was alive. But he's like, why would she hide this house? Obviously, because there's this dark history, what happened to his family. It's got all this cool stuff in it and it's well directed. It's just, it really is.
It looks really nice.
Yeah, it's just too long at the front to get you into it. So you're just kind of a little tired by the time you get to the stuff that actually starts to move. And the creature stuff is pretty fun, because it's kind of like some of these humanoid creatures we've seen, like from Alien to Extra to these things, but it kind of goes, and Predator, but kind of goes for like this almost petal flower type interior mouth thing that's super interesting. And it's got an aquatic thing that I figured would relate to you. So it's got all these cool elements. It's just, there's a little much of it, but it is probably pretty indie is my guess, outside of the person doing the creature effect. I think it's I still think it's worth watching. I think it's a cool creature feature. It just, it does take a little while to get to what it's going for, which is a bump.
Yeah. Like prepare for a slow burn first two, but then the third act, I loved the creature.
Yeah.
So that was The Tank. I rented that off Amazon. I'm not sure if it's already streaming anywhere. But yeah, so that was, I like the creature.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was both of us technically, right? So, I don't think we have any others in common. I don't believe so.
I have two more to quickly discuss.
Yeah, I have two more too. So I'll do one quick one. I saw another one that was probably more indie sci-fi horror called Capsules. Weirdly enough, I never heard of it. I saw Jim, again, cool thing about Letterboxd, somebody will post something, and Jim Cummings, the director, posted that he must have seen this at a festival thing, and he gave this rave review and comparing it to Tarkovsky and all these things. I wouldn't go that far, but it's definitely a film that, had I seen at a festival, I'd like even more. But it was interesting. It was about these four college students, med students, studying. One of them decides we need to stay up later. So they're trying all these substances to study. And they see this old guy walking down the street, and he collapses and drops, and he looks kind of out of it, like he's not really there. And he drops these pills, and they take it. And one of them's like, hey, maybe we could try what he's been on. And they take it, and it becomes this kind of like, there's hints of otherworldly, not quite Lovecraftian, but kind of their hints of some other dimension type stuff. It never goes fully visually into that world, but you get the feeling they're doing. So what happens very quickly is one of the first character who took it actually dies, and they realize we have to give them more of these capsules to bring the character back from death. And so I think it's, if you're interested in like indie horror, like super indie on the fringe horror, that's shot it's shot beautifully. So it looks more of a sci-fi horror kind of thing, but it doesn't 100% deliver for me. It's more like, oh, this is interesting. Be curious to see what this person makes next. More than complete satisfaction with this. But again, I hadn't even heard of this. It's on Amazon, brand new, rented it for a few bucks. Capsules by Luke Momo. But I am curious to see more from these guys, because it was super short too, like 80 minutes long. So
that's tantalizing right there. This one was not super short. It could have been shorter. I wanted to love The Black Demon. This is the massive
I was excited
movie.
For you.
I was so excited. And I will say there are parts of this that I deeply enjoyed. And then there were other parts, not so much. The whole setup is that there is a rig inspector who has shown up in the Baja Peninsula. You get the idea that he like designed and is like one of the managers of this massive oil rig. And it's kind of fall. It's like derelict at this point. Like it's really broken down. And he gets there and everybody is freaking out on the oil rig. And he's like, what's wrong? And he's like, what's wrong? And they're like, the demon won't let us leave. And it is literally a demon megalodon that's just circling this derelict wreck or rig that is not letting anybody leave. And it's like fucking up the rig and people are falling off and everything like that. So they're then stranded on this crumbling rig in the middle of Baja, and his entire family is there with him. Like he's got his kids and his wife, and he and his wife are having problems and keep fighting, and his kids resent him. And then you've got a demon megalodon shark in the water. And there's a lot, he is very much kind of, there's a lot of kind of xenophobic in there because it's Mexican workers. And he's like the white dude coming in from America, but his wife is Mexican. And so there's a lot of xenophobia that's working in there as well. The CG for me, very mixed quality.
Wait,
there
on a modern shark movie? You have bad CG?
I know. You know, I was reading a review of it a couple of days ago. I was reading on Letterboxd right after I watched it. And somebody wrote, and it's a great point. After, you know, we made Jaws like what? Like 40, 50 yeah. years ago.
And it still
How
works.
Does that look better than any shark movie that has come since? And it's true. It's fucking true. And this one, so giant megalodon. And I mean, I really don't ask much. I mean, like, honestly, I you could draw a shark on a sheet of paper and float it around the screen. And I'm still going to watch because it's a shark movie. But there were parts of it that looked good. And then 2 seconds later, it would be a different shot and it would look awful. It didn't look like the same shark consistently from shot to shot. It looked like he was varying in size. Some, it looked like, you know, had a lot of well done detail to them. And then other shots look like temp. So it was, that was kind of offsetting for me. I will also say, and this is not revealing any spoilers about, you know, who's going to die in what order or anything like that. But because it is a demon shark, they establish early on that he's kind of like a supernatural being. He has the ability to make people on the rig hallucinate. Like they'll have like waking nightmares. And the way that I looked at it is if you have a giant fucking megalodon, you don't also need hallucinations. Like it was adding, I just didn't think it was necessary. And it was like, the shark can do that to you. And I was kind of like, but you got a megalodon. Like, why do you see need to also have like psychological attacks?
Maybe that helps us understand Jaws 4 better. Maybe that Jaws 4 also had those powers.
Yeah. It was all hallucinations. Yeah. And so, yeah. You know, this is for shark completionists. Like me and Josh Miller and Steven Scarlatta and like Meg Navarro, like we're going to be there cheering for this just because it is a shark film and I will watch any shark movie. It's small theatrical right now. I think you can probably wait till this one hits your home market. But that said, for shark completionists, you got to see it. It's still a giant fucking megalodon, no matter how you slice it. And it still does have some pretty fun giant fucking megalodon moments. So keep that in mind, The Black Demon.
And I like the actor in it, Josh Lucas, I believe.
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys I like in movies.
And he was very good looking in this movie, very lovely on screen, and did a good performance against a questionably CG shark.
Oh, well. My last movie, a couple TV shows just to mention, but nothing in depth, but is one of my favorite of the horror films so far this year, and probably my favorite of the Shudder horror films this year. This one I want you to watch this week because I think you'd dig it. It's called From Black. Our friend Monty Yazzie from the Phoenix Horror Film Festival had recommended this from when it played his festival. So it just hit Shudder this week. It's From Black by Thomas Marchese. And this one was very reminiscent, like the setup, too much so for me at the start, of A Dark Song, which I think is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Like the longer we've gone away from Dark Song, I realize now how emotionally complex and like just quite brilliant that movie was. Crazy that director has not made another movie. He did.
Are you serious?
No, I looked him up yesterday. He did some episodes of The Haunting of Bly House or whatever, but hasn't made.
I met him on that because I shadowed.
I think I remember you saying that.
Bly Manor. And I got to meet him on set.
His name's Liam something.
Yeah, Liam Gavin.
Liam Gavin. But look, I think Dark Song is a brilliant film. But this one, after the setup changes enough that it becomes, leans into a different quality, which I really like. So it's you have a recovering drug addict who has kind of fallen asleep and not paid attention to her kid. And the kid has gone, well, she wasn't recovering then, she was just high, and her kid goes missing, and, you know, likely dead. And she is in a self-help group a year later or whatever, and she meets this guy who runs the group, and the guy who runs the group is the dad of one of the characters in Euphoria, and he's really good in this film. I wrote his name down. John Ailes is the name. And by the way, the drug addict is played by someone who doesn't usually play this. Anna Camp from Pitch Perfect. So this is a very different kind of role. She was also True Blood, very memorable. She's really good in this. So anyway, she meets this guy, and at one point he comes to her and he says, "Look, you know how I lost my daughter, and she was, you know, killed a couple of years ago. Well, what if I told you there's a way to get them back?" And so that's what I mean by it has that similar. There's a ceremony we can do kind of thing as a Dark Song. But when it starts to deviate, which is basically starts leaning more into a Hellraiser movie, where you could almost imagine this being a Hellraiser sequel, because there's this specific demon and a way to bring to see your child again, but you have to sacrifice something for it. And there's a couple of visuals where the thing you see reminded me of like a really effective Cenobite, and it gets really, there's a couple really fucked up effect moments and just like really creepy uses of this thing that you're bringing back. I don't want to say much more than that because of the setup of the movie and give it all away, but that's where it won me over, because it wasn't just the setup. It delivers. Like, it goes pretty hard in the middle of this movie. It also has Jennifer LaFleur, who was a good friend of our friend Mark Kelly, the actor. She was in films with him. She's playing a cop investigating it. And so it's like a three-person kind of thing, but it has moments that feels quite big, even though it's this like intimate Shutter horror. But sometimes these movies don't deliver. You know, they'll give a good setup and it won't have the horror payoff. And this really does go there once it gets going. So I want to make sure people, you know, it puts on people's radar, because there haven't been a lot of movies like that so far this year. You know, I thought Malum was another one that we obviously covered, but those movies that really kind of deliver as, you know, the horror. So I think you'll dig this. I'll be curious to see what you think. But that's From Black
now on Shudder. Yeah. I'm going to end with what I have a feeling is going to make my top 10 list this year. Cool. And this is Clock, which is now on Hulu. Okay. I loved this one. I thought this one was great. It's Cronenberg-y, but from a female perspective. The setup is this woman. This is kind of becomes part of the plot. It's massive part of kind of her backstory. It's a Jewish woman who just doesn't want to have kids. Like, she's 38, I think is the age that they give her in this. And she just does not want to have kids. And her husband wants them. Her dad really wants her to have kids. There's this absolutely amazing line where he's like, "Your mother survived, or your grandmother survived a concentration camp, so you could just end the family bloodline right now. Like, how do you think that makes her feel?" And so it's this massive amount of family guilt that she's feeling to have kids, but she just has no urge to have kids whatsoever. And so she goes to this special doctor who refers her to this clinic that is supposed to kind of reset her clock. That is supposed to, it really, the clinic treats not wanting to have kids like a disease, not even just a biological disease where your hormones are out of whack, but like a psychological one too.
The only thing that scares me about this is that on Hulu last year, it was my least favorite film of the year, was the Pierce Brosnan film where he's the gynecologist trying to impregnate, and he's impregnated all the women with his, like, you know, he's like, it's ridiculous. It was so bad.
It was like a news story from like a couple days ago.
That may be stupid.
No, this is great. So the girl goes to the clinic and she goes through, it's all of this weird kind of altered states level stuff that she goes through at this clinic. But then when she comes back, she suddenly feels this urge starting to well up that she wants to have a kid. But at the same time, she starts having these crazy nightmare sequences and all of these weird psychological problems and biological problems. And this gets fucking bonkers. It goes so Cronenbergian. And it's got some decent jump scares to it. It is really grounded in Jewish faith and the historical background of it, because she talks about like part of her not wanting to have kids is like her own feelings on the Holocaust and the evil of man. And why would you want to bring kids into this world? So it's really grounded in the fact that she is Jewish and facing this pressure from her family. But there is so much to love in this. The director is Alexis Jacknow, who I've never heard of, but she teaches with me at USC. She's in the theater department. Mm, cool. I've never met her, so I feel like I need to email her now and just be like, really fucking brutal movie. That's really good. So I thought this was outstanding. This is Clock, currently on Hulu. This definitely packs a lot of horror punch in it.
Well, how fascinating that you said it was Cronenbergian from a female perspective, which also is true of a little remake called The Dead Ringers Show, which is literally a Cronenberg remake done with a woman lead. I've watched the first three episodes of this, so I won't go deep, but I wanted to tell people because I was like, what? That doesn't really need a remake. And it's not really a remake. I mean, it is. They're the Mantle twins. They're, in this case, you know, twin gynecologists, similar personality types as the movie, both played by Rachel Weisz, who is just one of the great actresses, and I've always loved her and always thought she was just incredibly beautiful since, you know, The Mummy, and she's fantastic. But this is the thing that actually started to hook me is one of the creators of the show is Sean Durkin, the guy who did Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, which is a great indie film about cults, and it has that aesthetic. It hasn't gone hard too much yet for the first three episodes. There's only six in the whole thing, so I'm going to finish it before our next episode, but it is fascinating in terms of siblings and twins, and like, you know, you have the one who's super confident, the other one, they are trying to build their own, they hate the healthcare system, they hate, you know, how women are treated, so they're trying to create a birthing center that will be, you know, front and center that experience, but also on the side they're also trying to figure out, can they create embryos outside of a woman's body and just do it all that way? So there's a science part to it that's slowly burning. Super good show. Like the quality of it is just a show. Like if you like Severance, you would like the show because it's just that kind of quality. It hasn't gone har yet, but I did see McGarris tweet somewhere. He said something, this part of what made me push the button. He said something like Dead Ringers is his favorite Cronenberg movie. And he's like, and this is as good as that. And I was like, okay, wow. Well, when you're throwing that around, that's pretty hard. And you know, whilst I wouldn't go quite there yet, it is certainly effective so far. I just don't know what the darkness will be besides their personalities yet. So I'm curious, but yeah, I do recommend it. And I also finally dived into the first two episodes of Yellow Jacket season two, which I hadn't started because I'd forgotten it was back. Honestly, it felt like I used to know Yellow Jackets was such a talking point the first season. And then this season, I didn't even know there's already six episodes out. I was like, what? So I just started watching it, and it's hard to catch up because there's so much you have to remember, but it's such a good show.
I logged into Amazon a couple days ago and suddenly it was like, would you like to watch From 2? And remember how much I loved
wanna see that
From
too,
season
yeah.
1. The second season is out and I had no idea until it was like, you know, five of the episodes are there now.
Well, let's watch the first of that when we do next time, because that's another show I think is great. But it's crazy how you just forget. And you forget because of how hard it is to find what platform something's on now.
Everything.
They move around like Paramount Plus. And now they're on this. I think that one changed. I think From is on a different thing than it was before.
I think it's still on Paramount Plus.
No, I looked it up. It was something I didn't even know what it was. I was like, what? So I feel like it moved and maybe they became one entity or whatever. But, you know.
No, that has become a big problem. And I will say that, like, especially now that the writer's strike is happening, like a lot of the talk that I'm hearing, it's revolving around the different SVODs and AVODs and how they're all working. And, you know, the fact that I probably pay more out monthly now than I would if I would just like subscribe to cable again.
Yeah.
Like I assume cable used to be like 70, 80 bucks a month. Do you still have cable?
I still do, right? But because of a couple weird things I watch, like the one that I haven't wanted to get rid of is TCM. I don't know why. I just always find something every few months on there that I'll never find anywhere else. But I probably should cut it because other than that, I'm not watching much cable. You know what I mean? And so,
I have probably 15 different subscriptions and every single time I want to quit one, then something like Clock will come on Hulu. And then I'm like, I've got to see that. But then my kid really wants to see that Scooby-Doo thing and it's only on Boomerang. And now I'm back on that for $5 a month. And then From comes back and now I've got to join something else. And yeah, I probably pay out way more than I did with cable. But yeah, it's a hot mess at the moment.
It is.
But anyways,
yes, we will see what the writer's strike, you know, if it stretches on, we might have another one of those periods where some of the things we watch are very questionable that can't start getting made. We'll see.
I'm walking the picket line tomorrow and Friday. Good. So we'll see. Or I guess, since this will debut on Friday, I will currently be on a picket line walking.
Good.
So yeah.
Do it.
It's wild times in Hollywood. But anyways, let's hear from our sponsor and then let's talk about some kids in peril. Tonight's episode of Colors of the Dark is brought to you by Athletic Greens and their nutrition drink, AG1, a product that Elric and I have been taking every day. After months of being in quarantine, Elric and I both wanted to improve our health in the new year. So we decided to try Athletic Greens. It's a health supplement that actually tastes great and really boosts your energy. Plus, it's from New Zealand, which Elric loves.
So what is AG1? With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole foods, source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, all those things.
I started taking mine daily right before my breakfast and before I started in with the coffee. So it became this thing that I was looking forward to as soon as I got up in the morning. It lets me know that I'm getting the nutrients I need. And after trying to choke down an assortment of homemade kale and quinoa smoothies I was making, I gotta say, the taste of this is great. It's got this wonderful lemon flavor. And it's lifestyle friendly, whether you are keto, vegan, dairy-free, paleo, or gluten-free. As you guys know, I have crazy food allergies, and it is free from all of the 8 major allergens, which I was really impressed with. AG1, it's a small micro habit with big benefits, and it costs less than $3 a day, so way cheaper than the cold brew habit.
Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition, especially heading into the flu and cold season. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. I take it like 30 minutes before coffee, and it actually has given me a little boost of energy, which has been great. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/COTD. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/COTD to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Welcome back and welcome to the show. Someone who we both love dearly. He's been on a couple other iterations of our show before, but I am pleased to welcome back from RLJE Films, Mark Ward. How the hell you doing tonight?
It's good to see you guys. I miss you guys. You guys are like family. I could do this every week with you guys, but it would be like a 9-hour podcast. I wish I saw you guys more from our little Zoom, but
it's totally no. Mark will call me and he'll just like, you know, business stuff, like movie release, this thing. And then all of a sudden it transitions into, wait, what are you reading this week? And then like an hour later, we're still going over books we're reading. What are you reading this week, by the way?
So I'm still reading Grady's, which I'm digging so far. I'm about to where it gets into like the goods. So I kind of just like obviously reading like some reviews. I kind of know where it's going, mm-hmm. But again, I'm like I said, the constant reader of Grady's. So I'm very excited. But I have to plug it's my coffee table book that I go to bed with, and I always just read a chapter, maybe fall asleep. That if I don't want to fall asleep to, I have the Canon film guides. Oh, yeah. There's a volume 1 and 2. They're tombs, but they're, as I say, when movies were movies, it is so fun. And it's like just reading, you know, they do a little capsule, they'll have interviews. It's like a really well done book by, and I think his name's Alan is the author. It's just, he does such a great job.
Yeah, I've got the first one on my shelf because I had to read it. I did a screen draft where we did the, you know, picking all our favorite canon.
Oh, so that'd have been awesome.
So I had to use the first part, but the second part hadn't come out. I didn't realize it was out. So I have to jump on that because there's always, it's funny, there'll always be titles with canon. You know, all the ones that you love or that are obvious, you know, you're Enter the Ninjas, but then there'll be something on there. I know, I think Tarantino pointed out like a couple that would have been his favorites that I hadn't heard of them. One was a David Carradine film called POW, you know,
yes, War, like,
the Escape. Yeah, POW, the Escape. Yeah, there's always something outside of your purview, but I'm impressed that you know that one.
Mine was all the weird dance movies because they did Salsa and then they did Lambada. Those things like spoke to me I was 10.
Like the break-ins and then like the Apple, break-ins, which is like, I think about disco.
Oh, the Apple.
Like those guys, look, I just tip my hat. Like, I know, like, it was, I can't imagine, like, there's got to be like an Offer series, like the Offer, you know, did Godfather. I would love just to see, I know, and I love the doc dearly about those guys, but there's even, which would funny tidbit that I didn't realize, like Cobra, it wasn't a canon movie, technically. It was like a pickup, which it feels, I mean, clearly it feels like a canon
movie. It has all the feelings. So I put that at actually at number one on this draft. And
I remember that. Oh, that's right. I do remember.
And I won't reveal who, but let's just say a very famous person wrote me an email, chewed me out about it, saying that's not real canon. That's a pickup. And it's one of the funniest emails I've ever received because they were so impassioned about it.
That's awesome.
But I love Cobra, and Cobra does feel, it does have the key product placement, and Stallone.
It's got the trappings of canon.
And they did over the top, so close enough.
Agree.
Well, I would love to eventually, Mark is the guy that I call whenever I need to kind of get like a gut check on what's selling, where the industry is, are werewolves going to be hot next year? Like, he is the guy who has the intel on that. But I want to back up because I don't know your origin story. And this is the crazy thing. I have probably been working with Mark for 15 years, maybe longer.
Maybe probably longer.
Yeah.
I've been at this iteration of this company 13 years next month.
Wow.
No, this, oh my God, 13 years this month. I've moved to LA for like Image Now to into RLJE into like the AMC.
And we should probably also tag in what they do just in case somebody comes in fresh today. What is RLJE?
Yeah.
Sure. No, like, so I'll start with that. So RLJE, you know, we were Image, Bob Johnson bought us, oh my gosh, like 10 years ago. And then at the time, you know, like they gave me the keys and I was like, look, let's, you know, I came from Anchor Bay. That was my, you know, Anchor Bay, which was to me, like, I still have the Anchor Bay model in mind of how I think movies should be made and seen. And I think like the Anchor Bay model still works in every type of release of like of the world changing. It's still the type of movies that work. You lead with Halloween and Dawn of the Deads and Evil Deads, but hey, in the corner, there's very cool curiosities like the Fulci and Argento movies that we released back then. Now there's a million cool, like Severin and Shout, like there's a million, you know, Arrow, there's a million cool like Anchor Bay. But I always say Sons of Anchor Bay, you know, but again, I took the same model there and we got there like, look, you know, hopefully star driven stuff. And we really got on a roll. I would say the first one, ironically, we bought The Cobbler with Adam Sandler the same year Tom McCarthy did Spotlight. So it was like Cobbler, not very well reviewed with Sandler, but then Spotlight obviously won the Oscar.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it got us kind of like coming in the door, having an Adam Sandler movie, but then really with the genre, like for our audience, really started like Bone Tomahawk. Actually, we did Odd Thomas, that, remember the Dean Koontz,
Antonio movie,
Stephen Summers. Yeah. And we did that. And then that kind of got us going. And then really it was like the Bone Tomahawk, Brawl on Cellblock 99 and Mandy, it's like Color Out of Space. Like those kind of movies start just, I'm not saying they became pop culture, but they really are so well regarded with kind of star driven stuff, doing something different.
Wait, are you hinting that we're going to get a Zoller Nick Cage film?
That would be a universe
I would want to see. Yeah,
exactly. But like I always said, like Zoller doing like a Walking Tall for Bruce Campbell.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's what I wanted to see. I'd watch that.
Like,
but like pitch anybody, like, the world, make that happen.
Yeah.
But it always was like, look, and I'm like, I've said this, you know, it could be stolen or whatever, but like, look, make a one line synopsis that works everywhere from the LA, New York little bubble that, let's be honest, some of us are all in to Mark Ward from Piqua, Ohio, where I'm from. Like, guess what? You know, we watch Hereditary and Midsommar and Piqua, Ohio, where I'm from, but we also have a Sleepaway Camp poster on the wall. Mm-hmm. Like there, you know what I mean? So that's why we love this genre so much. Mm-hmm. It's for us, but it's so shapes and sizes. And I was like, make a one line synopsis that works for all of that, but in 90 minutes or whatever it's long, go nuts. You know, everybody's like, oh gosh, Mark said this forever. I always steal from the Metallica documentary. Don't be stock. Don't be Lars Ulrich. Like Lars Ulrich said, like, just don't be stock. Go crazy. You know, like, why not? Like, that's how it's remembered. Like, take Mandy. Like, Mandy's a perfect example. If I just did a one-line synopsis, it's about a revenge, you know, it's a revenge movie where a guy's wife gets killed by a satanic cult and he goes for revenge. I've seen that movie before, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen it, like, or something similar. Mm-hmm. But I'd say, correct, but you haven't seen Mandy. And that's why it worked so well. Yeah, and that's like, look.
Yeah, the parts you can't explain with words.
Right. Can we do that every time?
Yeah.
No, but fuck, we could try.
Panos can.
Panos can. Look, I'm like, I love him. I need some Panos in our life, yeah. You know, for sure. And so that's like the dream, you know, like, and, you know, I've gotten very lucky working with great filmmakers, like your guys itself. Like, you know, we've worked, you know, together a lot. We've had a lot mm-hmm. of fun. I know one of the reasons we're even here today, like with the topic of like, look, and working with the Joe, the Egoses, the Jason Eisner, like I love those guys. And I like, you know, worked with Travis, just, you know, like we have something because we are still a community. And myself, IFC, Shudder, which is all like the new where we're at now, like in like the new iteration from AMC Networks, like we want to be the home for you guys, like for all shapes and sizes, from, you know, like again, for it works. And that's why even like I'm not speaking for Shudder, but like that's what Shudder I think is. Like it's such a cool, you can watch anything you want. Like if you're looking for something or something new, like it's going to be there.
But you're not talking about content. Like that's the difference, is like the way you're talking about it. You're not somebody who's talking about it as content or product. It might be those things. It might need to fill boxes, but that's not how you mm-hmm. see it. You still see it with the passion that the creators of art, these films take it. And that's the thing that needs to be maintained in the industry, because that's the dangerous slope we have when people just need to fill boxes for online content.
And I look at, and then like I said, Rebecca knows this because we've worked, like, but I always say, like, I'm just the babysitter for your movie. And here's the good news: you have us, like the whole team, because we have a small team from womb to tomb. And that's day one till the end of whatever release it does, like in whether theatrical, VOD, digital, Shutter, you know, AMC Plus, all that stuff. Like you have us all through it. And by the way, like I said, like you can go out to dinner, but leave the ring on and watch the whole thing. You know, like because I just want you guys to come back. I want you guys, look, maybe the first, third, fifth movie, go do the studio movie in between, but go flex your muscles and, you know, have some fun. And I think that's why we've been very lucky to get great filmmakers and I think really cool films, you know, throughout the company. And mm-hmm. I think you'll see, you know, I really do, like, I can't spoil and say some stuff, but you're going to see a lot of cool like stuff coming this year, you know, and next year from that whole group. So, yeah. I mean, it honestly, like as an older man now, saying this, like it is exciting. It's a scary time for sure. You know, but I'm very bullish on that independent kind of film future in terms of, well, especially in our genre.
Yeah.
Look at Talk to Me, you know, like that little film out of Sundance. I was like, what's this? Now bidding war between, I hear, you know, A24 and like other Monkey Paws, you know, and things like that. Like, I don't know if that's true, but now it's going to go on 2,500 screens.
That buzz reminded me of when You're Next had that first Toronto screening.
Oh, yeah.
And it just was a bidding war. And
I was there.
I remember when The Witch had the bidding war going on.
I was at Your Next screening. And, you know, just look, we're all, how many guys, we watch 1,000 horror movies, and whether movies, books, a year, just because that's our jam.
It's our biz. Yeah.
And just to be in a theater, and just to see that electricity, it was that's the dream. You know,
I know I'm on a good thing when I know something's going to be good when I close my eyes at the halfway point of the trailer.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So it'll be the hands one, the one you're just talking about, which I had heard of coming out of Sundance, but had seen no images. And then
at the theater and you were like, I'm closing my eyes.
Because at a certain point, I did that with The Witch and it scared the shit out of me. The Witch trailer, I was just like, oh, whatever this is, the sound design's great and I'm going to love watching this movie because I want to get a taste of it, but I don't want to see every image, you know.
And not to pimp my sister company's movie, but like, that's how I felt when I, like the Skinamarink trailer, I was like, holy shit. Yeah.
I hadn't seen any of that. I hadn't even seen a frame when I sat down to watch that. And that helped a lot to not know
that
what you're in for.
That was sent to us. I think it was probably either the Shudder or the RLJ team who sent that over to us months in advance.
It was definitely Shudder. Like, I wish I could take credit. No, like those Shudder and then Sam and Adam Kohler, who's actually at IFC, like they found this movie. And I was like, like first I was like, is like 90 minutes of this? Like before I watched it, like, you know, like, and I was like, what? And then I watched it, I was like, you know, it was almost like that famous like Spielberg Paranormal Activity story. Oh, like yeah. He saw it and then he put it in a paper bag outside doors, like never get this out of my house, but also release it on 2000 screens. Yeah. You know, like it was like that's how I felt like Skin of Ray. Like, so those guys did a great job of identifying and finding that movie. And like Kyle, man, like who, like I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah,
he's a good kid. He's a good person too. Like I'm excited.
That's cool.
But again, when good things happen to good people, that's how I look at it now. As like I said, getting older, I'm like, I just want everybody to succeed. It's so fun to watch.
Well, you talk about getting older. You started in the early 30s. And so when cinema was just a new art form, for anyone listening, now they're imagining you as a much older.
As a much older guy.
I got very lucky, like the almost, I call it like the almost famous story. Like I got super young and very lucky to get in early at Anchor Bay, like right out of college.
Yeah. How did that happen? And what were you doing? Because I knew you, I started at Fangoria when I was like 22 and you were working at Anchor Bay. And I ended up like, we were talking like all that time back and forth.
I think I've told the story a couple of times, but like I literally, it was in Anchor Bay, was in Troy, Michigan. I went to Ohio University and I'll never forget going into a Best Buy, probably like, let's say 97 at this point. And there was a 2 VHS disc or what's called, whatever, cassette, like it was a 2 disc VHS set of Halloween. And I was like, what the fuck? Because, you know, obviously Halloween was like, you know, top 5 movie all time, right? And the second disc was all extras. Ooh. And I'm like, again, it was, but it, like at Ohio, like Laserdisc really didn't come to me, guys. Like I was way too poor, like Laserdisc, like that's the rich folks having those. So like we were VHS kids, like I'd tape on my Panasonic VHS 3 movies, you know, in long play or whatever. Like that's how it was. And anyway, I saw this and it said Troy, Michigan. And I called and ironically, a girl who's marketing, who was actually really good friends with my now wife. She's like, that's Anchor. That's Handelman. That's Anchor Bay. Like that's Handelman who we're trying to recruit out of OU. So I was like, all my life, you know, back then when they had job fairs, now poor kids these days don't, you know, have that. It's the only place I interviewed. And I went in, they're like, we're not going to give you Anchor Bay yet. You got to go through this training program. And Anchor Bay wasn't even the same building because we were like pariah. They were like, by jokes, like we were pariahs, which is, it was like rebels. I mean, it was a very cool time. And I went over there once a week and talked to this guy named Jay Douglas, who passed away a couple years ago. And like, we did a nice Deadline article on him, like Malik Akkad set, you know, did something, Bruce Campbell again, like, cause he was literally the freaking like Lester Bangs of the industry. And him and like Bill Lustig, I always say like deserve to be in every video Hall of Fame.
Oh yeah.
They made like Halloween, like Halloween was like in Blockbusters for 99 cents. And they went and said, we want to make Laserdisc type stuff for VHS. And then obviously the advent of DVD. And I went over there every day. I joke is like, I Bud Foxed him. Like Wall Street, I called that. He was the Gordon Gekko and he was the goose I had to get. And one day he's like, fuck man, if you just take the job. And so I was acquisition coordinator and he actually, and you know, I got to go do, it was like, you know, my dinner with Andre, I got to come to LA from Michigan, met John Carpenter for like shrimp cocktail, like, because we wanted to do the Coupe de Villes, like his band, like we wanted to do a DVD, a concert of it. And he's like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? You guys are crazy. But it was like, you know, like we wanted, like it was rebels. It was like, I wish like we could do an oral history of it all because it was just very cool. And that's when Bill found Suspiria. Remember, we had all the big hits, like, you know, Evil Dead's, The Dawn of the Dead's, you know, because look, studios didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They didn't care. And then we just boom, boom. And every, you know, I know someone's going to joke about, well, yeah, because we know you did Evil Dead, Mark, because you released it 50 times. However, the suits would not let me buy Suspiria or any Fulci movie because they didn't, because foreign language, like that's not going to work at Best Buy and Walmart. And I'm like, trust me, it's huge. And I go, we'll release another Army of Darkness if you let us test this. And sure enough, it worked. We, you know, we did that $50 edition, sold out like in a week. And then they're like, okay, that's when you start seeing like even like the deliriums and then like the Jallo collections, like they let us do our thing. And then, you know, obviously got bought by Starz. And at that point it was like, you know, just they kind of closed the office down in Michigan, got lucky. In between that, we did Masters of Horror mm-hmm. when we got bought. And then those guys bought Image. They brought me in. I've been here 13 years now. They're long gone from this, but it's always been the same. Let's lead with some cool Nick Cage stuff. But then, hey, in the corners, there's some Psycho Gormans. There's mm-hmm. some cool, you know, The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot. Some wacky, like, again, those movies. I love that those movies still exist.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the thing that I best know you for is how do you keep track of trends? Like, how do you decide? Because like, just in case people don't realize how long it takes, like from the moment that you say, hey, we might like to have this movie, it's literally like a year and a half or more before you are actually ready to distribute it, right?
Yeah, I wish I knew. Like, I wish I could say there's some grand plan, but it's honestly, it's the pitch and the filmmaker. And like, there's certain things that never get old. Like, look, just take Joe and Christmas Bloody Christmas. Like, he was like, hey, because I was in a pitch, like, for, it wasn't his, but like for Silent Night, Deadly Night, like mm-hmm. the remake of all that stuff. And for some reason, I don't know what's happening with that, by the way. And anyway, Joe's a friend, you know, I think IFC ironically did his first one, but I've done the rest of his. I didn't do Bliss, but, you know, I did Mind's Eye, you know. Anyway, Joe's, you know, look, we all love Joe. And he was like, listen, I have this, you know, I heard you guys are cash flowing these movies, you know, because we did a couple, you know, couple movies. And he goes, I got this Christmas horror movie. And I'm like, well, it's funny enough, people were looking for holiday horror. And I'm like, can you do it for this amount of money? And, you know, Joe, he's like, sure, fuck it. You know, I'll do it. You know, and by the way, I'm like, and he's like, I'll have a car chase in it. I'm like, there's no way you're going to do all this for that money. And if you guys have seen the movie, he did. And, mm-hmm. and honestly, like, so I, you know, but I didn't anticipate, and I love our friend Josh Miller. I'm like, thanks a lot, Violent Night, because that kind of came out the week before. Yeah. And I was like, but again, you don't anticipate it. And now I'm sure we're going to see a million Christmas horror movies or whatever. Like, well, Bex, we did ours together. That's on Shudder.
Yeah, right, I did one years ago.
And by the way, that will be every year. I like to call it evergreens.
That's why I love that, because, you know, WGA is fighting for residuals right now. I make a Christmas movie, the residuals, I get a nice check on second quarter every year from wherever that gets replayed at Christmas time. It's still not like WGA residuals. But right. Yeah, it's helpful.
But I look at, it's almost like, look, reading those canon books, it's like, there's a reason we still talk about a lot of those movies, you know, like, mm-hmm. and like the third question is, are they any good? Like, mm-hmm. I think they're masterpieces, but you know, but I go, but that's what's cool. Like, cause they're, again, like we still have our own little club, and I just think that's so, like, not to be romantic about it, but it really, all we have is each other, you know, in this, like this, oh my gosh, the genre world. But I look, it's, you know, it's, there's a reason it's worked forever, and it will work forever.
Well, last year was, I mean, I was looking at last year, it was such a crazy good year in horror, like unbelievable, like one of the best in so long. And it just goes to tell you, it's just going to keep cycling, things keep changing. You get a boom of one type of horror, and then you start missing the other horror, you know. So I'll get into A24 horror because that's what's good for a while, and then suddenly all now I'm craving is a creature feature with a good costume, you know.
Right. And I think we'll see. Look, I think along, you know, I know Rebecca directed a movie, but like in that, like Talk to Me, The Boogeyman, like those kind of movies of like, that's like a Smile. Like now everybody's mm-hmm. going to chase the smiles. Right. Like that's for sure. And rightfully so, you know, but again, like Happy Accidents, like Smile was going to be a Paramount Plus movie. Evil Dead Rise was going straight to HBO Max. Like it's sometimes. Wow. That's absolutely true. And sometimes, you know what, we as fans, we speak, you know, and you speak loud enough, people, you know, they do listen.
Well, like Barbarian was going to,
Barbarian.
That was going straight to, that was definitely going straight to streamer until Jordan Peele saw it, right? So it took people to put pressure on, you know, studios.
Well, Boogeyman was supposed to go to Hulu.
Yeah, that was going to be a straight to Hulu.
But the test reads so good, they're like, let's go. And rightfully so. I would, absolutely. you know, I think it's going to, you know, that second trailer was great. I think it's going to rock.
Didn't even look like the same movie to me. When the second trailer came out, I didn't recognize any of the people from the previous trailer.
Yeah, they played it before Evil Dead, and both of us were like, what's this? Yeah.
I'm not dissing this first trailer, but I was like, ah, all right. Yeah. But the second trailer, like, okay, now I get it. Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah, it looked really good. And yeah, we need to have him on before that comes out, because
definitely. Yeah, that's awesome.
So I'm happy for him, too. I'm happy for him. You know, good for him.
Yeah. What are some of the favorite RLGE titles that you have released? Like, what are kind of your top ones? Look,
I think they'll say, you know, like, obviously the chalk I say is like Mandy, Bone, and Brawl. You know, we're just like, everyone loved them. You know, like, I was at Toronto with, you know, and I'll never forget, like, because, you know, like, Vince Vaughn is like, one, he's a massive man of a guy. And it was new. Like, I can tell you, like, I'm friends with him now. Like, he was nervous because it was a different kind of movie for him, you know? And he was, I will never forget, like, and I purposely, like, we kind of sat like Collider and a lot of the, like, the, those, you know, when you always see like the reviews come out early for something like Guardians 3 now, like early reactions. So a lot of those guys were there. I'm like, sit right next. And you could just see like him smile of like, you, like, people were like, oh, like, you know, remember like the dragged face across, like,
so good.
People were going nuts in the theater, you know, because it was his, it was that fan base, which I don't think he was aware of. And just like things like that. So like even like, you know, like that alone was awesome, you know? And like I said, Mandy, I remember like Vince Neil was sitting by Nick at the Sundance premiere. I'm like, fucking Motley Crue's here. Like, this is insane. And you know, and it's funny, like, I gotta be honest, the reaction for the first hour of that movie, because remember, I don't know if you guys have been to Sundance, like, the library's like, it's late, it's like kind of like a school set, it's like the turn the heat on a little bit, so it's like, you know, so the first like couple minutes, you know, you're like, all right, is this playing well? And then, you know, the rock concert starts, and it just was like, holy shit. I think McWeeny said it best. He goes, I didn't know if I liked Manny until I fucking loved it. You know, and that's kind of what happened with that. And it was like a runaway train. So those are like, but then like, look, I loved finding Psycho Gorman. Yeah. Like that kid is awesome. Like, he does like the do it, like a DIY almost kind of filmmaker of like doing it all. Like, it's just so cool. Like, so we, you know, but honestly, but like, I guess we're talking today, but like, I really, 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 you know, obviously Bloody Christmas, but I love Kids in Peril movies. Like, I think there's a magic to them that I think we lose mad. Like, I steal this for this book, Boy's Life. So everybody out there, if you haven't read Boy's Life, just Google Boy's Life, like, magic passage. And there's like a beautiful like thing about we were born with magic. And then we lose it because we get it schooled out, we get it churched out, we get it spanked out, and it's sad. And like, the adults know that like a little bit, and maybe that's why. And I think that's why we love, like, I love Kids in Peril movies. It's about just, you know, and they say like, oh, and you go to the movies, like, well, you get weepy sometimes, like, and like certain things, like, because you got that smell of the magic back for even if a half a second. And I think that's why I love the Kids in Peril movies, because, as you know, through as a kid, like, that's all we had. We didn't have internet and all that stuff, and it was like escapism to be like, there's a vampire at my window, there's this at this.
Yeah, that was our identification, right? That's where we, that's why the 80s are so rich with that subgenre, because
I think Eisner like came to me, he's like, I kind of want to make like the VHS 2, you know, but like as a movie, and just like, but like an R-rated kids movie. And I was like, fuck it. Let's go. Like, you know, and, you know, like, that's why, like, I can't wait for that movie to be found, you know? And I just, so like, again, I'm super proud of all of these. Like I said, I'm proud of all of them, you know, like, you know, at least you could see a sense of energy no matter what. And hopefully every movie that we try to buy, that, you know what, they're fucking trying, you know, and that's what's cool.
Definitely. I love the Kids in Peril, because as I was looking through it today, I realized that all of mine are of the 80s. Like, that is where it exists. And then I started thinking about it, and I was thinking about, well, what my own life was like during the 80s, which was me leaving on my bike at 8 a.m. and saying like, cool, mom, I'll be back by dinner. And there was no questions asked. And during that time, it was like, pipe bombs, playing with a Ouija board, you know, going through this abandoned house up at the end of the street. Like, there was just no control. And that's just not my shitty parents. Like, I assume that was just kind of everybody.
Our generation, yeah.
That was same. Like, both my parents worked. It was like, here's $5.
Oh, yeah.
And meanwhile, in the news, it was like child abduction, serial killers. Like, there's all these threats that I don't hear much about now. Like, now, sadly, the threat is this, like, very depressing one, right? About guns and schools. But back then, it was these, like, almost like sharks that were out there in the world. But we just kept doing our thing and didn't, you know, hopefully maybe we're just the lucky ones.
Did you guys ever have like the town legend? Like, we had ours, like, we'd have to ride our bikes. If we went to the pool, we have to go through the woods. And like, there was always this rumor of like this guy, we called him Rambo. And the guy was like in a like a trench coat flashing people. Right. Clearly a fucking that never happened, but people would come like we saw Rambo. And I was like, but it was like, oh my gosh, let's go. And like, it was a sense of adventure of like, you know, when you didn't have that. Now it's like everyone's on Life 360. You know where your kids are at all times.
Well, you're able to go on bubbles too easily now, sadly.
Yeah. Totally. No, ours in our neighborhood, we had this. So this area of the neighborhood used to be a park. It used to be like a park that you could go to, and they'd since closed it down. They built a new park and trees had grown up over it. They'd actually walled it off because the county had taken possession of it and was using it for like power plants and storage and transistor and stuff like that. But if you broke through the fence and hiked back, the picnic pavilion was still up. It was still a structure and you could go sit at it, still had picnic tables. But in the 80s, go Satanic Panic, some probably teenagers had covered it with like pentagrams and Motley Crue lives and Satan rules and all this stuff. And the neighborhood legend was that Satanists performed rites there all the time and they would capture the kids and sacrifice them if they caught you there. So we used to dare each other to hike back to the pavilion. And we did all the time. Like, we would ride our bike back there. And as soon as you get there, you'd hear something stupid in the woods and be like, oh God, it's the Satanists. And then you take off running.
That's what you're still like. I still search for that.
Yeah.
That feeling of it. So whenever you see it in a movie, like, it's like, again, you get that whiff of that magic, you know. Yeah. That's so cool, Bex. That's all. Like, again, that I still want to make a movie about that. Like, that's
it's my love of the Satanic Panic because
Me too.
My mom was very kind of hands off, but at the same time, she would have these moments where she'd be like, I heard that, you know, Judas Priest is satanic. I'm not going to let you buy his record. And that, even though at the time I was like 8, I didn't own a Judas Priest record, but all of a sudden I was like, I have to have one now. And she had forbidden me from listening to Ozzy Osbourne. So all I wanted to do was go to the neighbor boy's house, who was 5 years older than me. And he owned every Ozzy record. And I listened to them all back to back. It's probably part of what shaped me was her minimal amount of, well, I don't think you should listen to Ozzy. It was just like a guarantee I was going to fucking do it. So yeah.
I had an older sister. Reverse. I had an older sister. So sadly, I did listen to all of those at way too young of an age. So, I mean, I'm not screwed up at all. Like, wink, wink. Yeah, you guys said that. What about you, Elra?
Well, I must have had the most mixed message of any of you guys, because all the most fucked up movies I watched was with a lot of the times with a stepdad who just happened to be a minister. So it's so funny to me, like, when I hear, because Satanic Panic, I remember the Aussie, that trial about the, you know, the kid who killed, that did reach it to New Zealand, but I don't think we really had Satanic Panic there in the same way, for sure, as America. But I just remember every time, and I've told this to Beck a million times, but like, we would rent these movies, you know, early days VHS, and I'd be watching, you know, Friday 5 in a row. I'd be watching like 5 of them in a weekend. And I just turned to the left, you know, and my stepfather minister sitting there just, and he reacted like he's like the perfect audience member. Like, every kill is like, oh, help. Oh, Elric. I don't know if you should be watching this, Elric. And I'm just looking over at him going, what the hell are you doing here? But he obviously loved it. And he never once said anything more than that. Like, we watched Deliverance. I watched it at like 9 years old when they first got married on VHS. And it became the most important movie in my entire probably fabric of my being, you know, because it was just so shocking. But like, I think back to that and go, oh, that's so weird. Because unlike the tension of, oh, religion telling you it's bad, here is religion in the house saying, oh, that's fine. It was like, no, I don't think I had a normal upbringing when I think about it. But hats off to him. I saw him at Christmas for the first time in a long time. because he's no longer my stepdad, however the hell that makes sense. And it was just great to see him. You know, this guy is like, you know, 75 now. And I was just like, you know, I reminded him of this stuff. And he was just like, oh, yeah, he just, you know, not everything has to be an issue. You know, that's one of the problems here. It feels like things have to sometimes be so black and white. And I'm like, yeah, I think a lot of gray is totally cool. Yeah.
I completely agree.
You know, I had this conversation last night because Marnie really wants to go see Renfield. Mm-hmm. Now, Renfield is hyper violent, but it's not sexual in any capacity. It's just
and it's violent. Action violence.
And it's silly right. violence. Like I was like, somebody gets his arm ripped off and he gets like impaled on it. Yeah. Like it's fun, silly action. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to take Marnie to go see this. And then immediately I was like, wait, are they even going to let me in with a 10-year-old? Is this going to look bad? Is everybody going to be like, oh my God, she's a bad mom? So I still think that.
I think that one would be totally fine.
You'd be fine. No, I yeah. look, I have an 11-year, you know, I'm again, we're a little bit different, obviously, folks. But I mean, like our kid, like that's the thing. Is ratings even matter anymore with streaming? Like nobody, there's no like restrictions on Netflix. They could go watch freaking Sex Life. They would like they wanted to click on it. Like, you know, I'm not saying they're. I'm sure parents do restrictions. Please don't call us bad parents, everybody. I'm just saying, like, what nobody knows what an R rating is. I think under the age of 16.
And for I want them to be curious. I want them to like want to poke. But I did go with my friend, who's an editor, to see Barbarian with his whole family, and he had kids ranging from like 14 down to maybe 9. And I do remember all of them. It was really great because they clearly didn't know what the one part they are all asking afterwards is like, that one videotape that said something nurses, they're all asking about like the videotapes that are obviously alluding to much worse sexual shit. And I'm like, I understand that curiosity, but
I agree.
Wow.
I mean, look, that's why we're here too. Like, yeah. I remember seeing Fright Night way too young. Yeah. And like, we weren't a religious family, but I remember there was like this little cross in the house and I'd fucking carry that shit for like at night, like for a week.
Yeah.
No, my parents, even though that my mom was definitely curious about the music, because that's really what the Satanic Panic targeted was that music. There was no restrictions on movies because mom wasn't going to give up her sci-fi. And she was watching Aliens and Predator and, you know, every Enemy Mine. I remember that being one of her faves.
HBO staple.
Repetition. In my house, but all those kind of like horror sci-fi films of the 80s, she watched in repetition. And so I had no boundaries on what I could watch. It was just like, what are you watching? Revenge of the Nerds. Oh, okay. And then they would just walk away and that was it. And I was just left to my own devices to discover things way too early.
But so. I think the thing about Kids in Peril is we are all it's also why I think coming of age movies tend to be like the best first movie for a lot of people to make, because those feelings never go away. I can remember all my kind of coming of age, kind of any adolescent sexual things or anything like intimate or anything where somebody was bullying someone. Those feelings are as raw now as they could ever be. And so I think it's such a fertile ground. But I think we were all kids in peril, because even if terrible things didn't happen to us, there was always bullying. There was always parental yelling or some hints of violence in the adult world around us. So I think they're actually very honest movies, even when they're outrageously sci-fi or whatever. Yeah. Like The Gate, sure. Just throwing it out there. The Gate, I've always thought is one of the best in terms of the way the kids feel like real kids, like legit. T-Bore nails that film with Stephen Dorff and everyone just feels like kids who are nerdy, who can get together and actually work this shit out and take on demons, you know, which is fucking awesome.
And you mentioned the bullying. Yeah. That's something that's a part of every single one of these. Even if we look at contemporary versions like Stranger Things, the idea of there is always the one kid in my elementary school that I would literally walk a full perimeter around the building rather than have to walk past them because I knew they would say something to me. And I feel like that's still something that we encompass in a lot of our Kids in Peril movies.
And talk.
And it's scary, you know, look, not to like go even darker now, but we didn't have to worry about even what kids have to worry about now. Yeah. Like it's just like that. It's even more of an innocence loss. And it's sad. Like, you know, I just, you know, like all of us as parents, you know, it's like you don't want that, you know, I can't even imagine thinking of what they do when they go to school, you know, now, you know, and it's, you know, and
it makes you question that. Well, how could there even still be bullying if your bullies could result in the worst imaginable, but it doesn't change human behavior is just wired in at young kids who aren't fully developed are always going to be bullying. They're always going to be bullied. And often the bullies are the ones who are being bullied somewhere else in their life. It's such a cycle. And I do think these movies often gave us the feeling of like, oh yeah, not just the cheesy, yeah, you can overcome it, but I think they're also, were just exciting to watch too, because, you know, you're just being placed in this position, you know, the power of these don't go away. But I'm curious, like, I know we're all going to highlight a handful or a couple each or whatever. I picked weirder ones. So I wanted you guys to go first just because I figured you guys would stay in the line a little better.
Well, that's what, like, I know, because I was, you know, like, I was trying to go, like, my top two, like, are always, like, they're pretty chalk, but, like, it's, I can't not have them in there because I wouldn't be here without those. But I try to have a couple, like, deep cuts or, you know, things like that. But it's hard. Yeah, you're right. Like, it's very 80s centric. Like, it's, mm-hmm. like, because I didn't want to put the new It in because, like, it's just, you know, I get it. Like, by the way, that for my kids, that's probably their, I'm sure, what will be a time, like, our old It, yeah, you know,
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
You
know? No, my kids loved that one. So, yeah, that.
But go ahead, Bex.
Oh, I was going to say the old It, like, melted my brain, and the new It did that for them. So, yeah.
Exactly. And that was cool. I actually went and saw that at the theater with my, probably at the time, again, 12-year-old, maybe 11, but he loved it. Like, they loved it, you know, and they were like, it was like a cool experience to see that through their eyes of like, man, the magic's still there for these kids. And that's why they love Stranger Things. They love the Karate Kid again. Like, that's Cobra Kai, but that Stranger Things, they all three, I have 16, 14, 11 for everyone, but like they all separately love those shows in different
reasons. And it was reasons. Cool that that series got more hard turned into art, like, yeah. By that last season with that for creature, sure. It was a lot more, you know, my kids wouldn't be ready for that one yet, but at some point it's the perfect kind of kinder trauma, yeah. slowly pulls you in to the hard stuff. What are some other ones for you guys?
So I want to mention three that are, I think, on Shudder right now, like, that, you know, that I absolutely love. It's obviously, we talked about Kids versus Aliens again, like, we're here, like, Eisner freaking that, and his VHS 2, that is Slumber Party Alien Abduction. Dude is just, he gets it. I think because he loves wrestling. Like, he's like me. We loved wrestling, yeah, as kids. I did too. He loved, like, metal.
Who,
like,
was your wrestler in the 80s, like, when you're young, like, of the WWF guys?
I was, it's funny. I love both. I loved NWA or WCW. Yeah. Like, I was a Rock and Roll Express fan, okay. Because I thought they were rock and roll, yeah. And they were cool, and like chicks liked them. So I was like, I wanted to be like those guys. But like, you know, like, I mean, everybody loved, you know, Hogan and Flair, but like Flair, clearly I have a gift for gab, as you guys know. Like, so Flair, like, I would be, again, I was a Lashky kid. I'd listen to Ric Flair promos and things like that, is like Dusty Rhodes and like Hulk Hogan promos. And that's how you learn how to public. That's how I learned how to public speak. You know, sad as it is.
I'm a little sad that New Zealand's still represented by the Bushwhackers.
Oh, by the way, I love me
so
much.
We have is
by the way, rest in peace. I think one of them just died.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of them just died.
Well,
yeah.
Here's for them. Whoa, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. lick heads.
That's all they said. Anymore. I don't even think they were from New Zealand.
I think they were said to be
from New Zealand, but I don't think the wrestlers had ever probably even been there. I did like those British Bulldogs quite a bit.
Yeah,
the British Bulldogs.
Coco Beware had it going on.
Coco Beware.
My roommates in college got super into wrestling. I lived with two guys, and that's all they did. We bought every WrestleMania and everything. So I know the, like, early 2000s D-Generation X.
Absolutely.
Like nobody's business. Played the game repeatedly. That was like every night till 2 a.m. while drunk. But yeah.
But it's not different
Monday night's crazy movies
because I have a very, you know, it's a similar kind of vibe because I have a very about buying in. Like when we would watch, you know, Creature in a Suit, and you know it's fake, but your brain doesn't allow you to say it's fake because you go with it. I remember very well when, I think it's, was it Brett the Hitman? No, or Brutus the Barber, who got cut across here by, I think the guy was Outlaw. He used spurs, and he cut the guy across the head, and it was the first time ever it had gone that dark and violent in the wrestling, and I was, it got me back in for a couple of, yeah, because I was 100% sure, oh my god, well, I'm sure he's using some sort of blood for real, but it was so like, oh wait, this is real, and suddenly you're back in again. You know, one smoke and mirrors and you're back, like, you've got your audience back in it.
No, it was, I uh When I worked for Dee Snider, my very first year working at Fangoria, I was Dee's assistant for Fangoria Radio, and he lived next to Mick Foley. And so Mick Foley like hung out with him. So I got to talk to him multiple times. He came on the radio show at one point. He would just, you know, pop into this the office to see Dee at times. And I always had so many questions about, okay, trash cans. Are those like real trash cans that you're throwing each other? Okay, cage match. Like, do you guys pre-plan like who's going to fall off the cage or the falls real? And every single one, he was like, no, no, it's real. Like they're trained to do it, but no, no, it's real. No, those are real metal chairs. They're not like fake metal chairs. And yeah, every single time I was like, really? Like, yeah.
And when it, and when that comes into horror, like too, like when he mixed specifically, when like they brought him in, you know, he used to be this Cactus Jack character, which is deranged and crazy blood.
But then they brought sock.
Then he became like exactly.
Mankind. Yeah.
But again, he came in to feud with the Undertaker, which is their version of the horror guy. You know, like yeah. So it's a lot of the same fan
and
base.
Kane, who I recall back as Dr. Isaac Yankum.
He was absolutely. Yeah. And again, so circling back to that, like. Jason can capture that so well that I think of like that wrestling fan and horror fan, like, you know, that's that because a lot of the same, you know, and I think he gets it. And that's why he's very impressive to me. Like, and I was really like, that's why I was like those two. I'm like, look, I think he got it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that, but the other one is another one is it's badass girls versus aliens. I call it like the thing meets, oh gosh, what was it? The one, but it's a Slashback. I don't know if you guys saw Slashback.
I haven't seen
it yet. It's great. It's so fun. Mm-hmm. Like, it's another, like, you know, like the heart is on the sleeve and like this, mm-hmm. this director, she's great. Like I'm telling you, like she's going to be like, I can't wait to see what she does next for what she had the budget for. And she just crushed it. So that one. And then obviously I think these guys, could be like the next, like Halloween or some studio is going to come calling is the Boy Behind the Door guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you guys seen Boy Behind the Door.
Yeah, one of my ex-students edited it, and he did an amazing job on it. And it's, like, it's such a tight movie.
Such a tight movie. And those guys could do those scares of, like imagine if it was Michael Myers instead of, like, the killer. Like, I just think, you know what I mean? Like, you see, like, Sick, and, like, that guy is, you know, you see, like, he could stage a scene so well.
Himes, yeah, mm-hmm. Himes' direction
yeah,
is great.
Himes, yeah. So those three are like the Shudder ones I want to mention. And like, and obviously I know you guys are going to talk about it maybe in a couple of weeks with the Angry Black Girl and her monster movie coming out June 9th. It's so good. And like Bomani did it, knocked it out of the park. And like, I really think he take that Frankenstein trope, but really made it just mean, you know, like it's very, very good. I don't want to spoil anything, but I really, it's more of a teen in peril, which like not kid, but so it's a little, it's out of this conversation, but I couldn't not give that a shout out. I'm really proud of all that movie as well when that hits in a month or so.
Well, I'm going to kick us off with The Gate, which Elric already mentioned.
I had it too.
This is one of those crossover films for me that I saw. I was probably 9 years old watching this. It was like right when it came out. And it was one of those where it was accessible for me because it was kids. But at the same time, it packed the punches and the scares. And it had satanic stuff and metal in it. So I was just already in because I'd been over at the neighbor's house listening to all his Ozzy albums. And yeah, I just love this one so much. Tibor Takacs is one of those directors that I was so fascinated by his films. Like every single thing he did in the 80s and 90s, I was all in. Like I just loved his body of work during that time period. But this one specifically, I love the idea of the giant hole in the backyard that, you know, the kids are left home alone and that, you know, all hell breaks loose. Literally, it's just such a joy.
Classic. So
Gate from 1987. I discovered a lot of my students have not seen this one or ever heard of it. Like it does not get the love as like the Freddy's and the Jason's. So if you are have not seen this one, it's definitely worth it.
That's crazy.
Very playful effects too. Like that, it's not just one thing. Like suddenly it breaks up into clay creatures, and that playfulness of experimentation in the 80s was so cool with effects. It's just, you know, you just really wouldn't see that much now.
Yeah,
I agree.
I'm writing down because that's one that I now need to watch with my kids because I feel like
I know I try. It was a little slow at start for them. Like, just wait till it gets going. You know, yeah. These kids are just like, you know, it's like boom, boom, boom.
I'm going to tell everyone that Mark Ward's kids prefer The Gate too. to the gate.
I know. I was going to say, has anybody seen the gate too? Because it's
wait,
the same.
Is that the curse?
Yeah. No, there's one called the gate too. It just doesn't quite work as well. But
hold on,
it's the same kid. Yeah. It's not dwarf. It's the same. It's the other kid.
Yeah, the geekier kid.
I would say it's not, but it's not Jonathan Ward. No relation.
Trespassers. That's it. It's the gate to trespass. Yeah.
They call it. I never heard of the tag. The whatever you call it. Like I didn't, I just thought it was the gate too.
Yeah. It still has cool effects, but it's nowhere near as good.
The curse is Will Wheaton, which is actually based on Color Out of Space.
That's one of those ones I would have seen the cover a million times. And I don't know if I ever even watched it when I was young, you know, like you passed every time you'd look at that cover.
I did. Yeah. We watched it quite a bit.
I feel like the gate too has a similar cover with like a hand and eyes in the background. Cause I
think so.
Yes. I think I'm mixing the covers up in my brain, but I'm going to keep us rolling on the 80s track, and I am going to go to Lady in White, which is one of my favorite, like, holy shit, are they going to kill this kid movie, which is Frank LaLoggia. I don't think I've
LaLoggia.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't think I've ever said his name properly in my life. But basically, it's a 1960s story, but it is a kid who gets locked into a school overnight and sees this ghost girl and realizes that she's been murdered and that he knows who the murderer is. And and then it goes from there as the murderer knows who he is. And,
the kid performance is really good. I remember him being
Lucas Haas. Yeah. I think he went from that right into Witness or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one, it was super tight. This is a slow burn. I've tried to convince people to watch it now, and they're like, nothing happens. And it is. It's very kind of, it feels very kind of ethereal.
Gothic? Yeah.
It's got this like bucolic pastoralness to the environment because it's like this tiny little 1960s like farm town.
Yep.
It's got almost, it feels of a different time, but it's still really good. And then the last one I included was People Under the Stairs.
That was my number three.
This is like my Barbarian from like 1991, where you're just watching it going, what the fuck? How more bonkers is this going to get? Oh my God, are they in gimp clothes? Wait, what? And this one. I watched this when it came out. I remember my mom renting it for me because I was so excited about it because I'd seen the trailers on TV. And she rented it for me like the day it released to Blockbuster. And again, my parents could have given two fucks what I was watching, but I had so many questions after this. And it was just like, I still don't understand some of the choices in it, but it is so goddamn bonkers. It feels like the Barbarian of the 90s.
That just blew me away that you're right. That was the Barbarian of that era. You just literally blew my mind with that. You're right. Because I saw that in the theater, you guys. Shouldn't have, because I was like shit in my pants. I was like, I thought they were brother and sister. What are they doing? Like, I was too young for them to know that. And then, like, you know, like even the people, like literally the people understand, like, it was so, I'm rewatching that tonight. Like, everyone out there, like, go find that right now.
Made creepier that they're a married couple in Twin Peaks, which is on TV the same time.
Oh my God,
you're watching them as a married couple, which I was as a kid. Twin Peaks was like entryway kind of stuff for me too. And then suddenly this movie comes out where you don't know what they are. And Everett McGill, you know, I know you're in there, boy. All that stuff really got me. The boy is, I like ones where it's just a kid sometimes, because it's like that one kid versus the adult world trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Fool.
Well, but then fool.
And it's about the kids, because it's the girl and then you've got Roach and, you know, then the people under the stairs, they're nothing but damn baby stealers or whatever the line is. Like, it all came back to childhood and an odd socioeconomical statement worked in there.
Got Marcellus Wallace crawling around the house.
I say you got Ving Rhames, baby. You got early Ving Rhames. That's right.
Yeah.
That's how he probably found that briefcase from Pulp. So come on. It all connects. It's a world.
It's all there.
What about you, Mark? Well, you go first in case I steal any of yours.
There's one that's, it's a little bit of a cheat, but it was like my deep cut that it was always on as a kid. And it scared me for some reason. There's a great, you know, I hate to say it's on YouTube because I don't think it's available anywhere else, but in a really nice, like transfer is Summer Camp Nightmare.
Oh,
I own this.
So it is scary. Go ahead, Bex. Go. Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, it's not available anywhere. I have like a bootleg that I bought at a convention of it. It's intense. It's based, isn't it Penelope Spheres? Yeah,
Penelope Spheres wrote it. So it's based on this book called The Butterfly Revolution, I believe it's called. And it's very Lord of the Flies. You know, it's really just, but it's set like in the 80s. And it's, you know, it's like, it starts off with like it's meatballs. like this is like a fun little movie. And Chuck Connors, you know, from obviously with Tourist Trap and the Werewolf Show, which I loved on Fox.
Me too. Loved the show.
The big bad. And he's like the mean counselor. Well, they had it up and they tie him up. And then like this one camp counselor that you think is like, I joke, like, look back, like, I thought it was Paul Rudd. Like, it's like a Paul Rudd look. It's like super nice. And then all of a sudden he just turns into like a horrible like dictator. Like Chuck Connors, they accidentally kill him, and then it turns into factions and guys and girls, and then it gets a little bit like kids are to their own devices, and it just turns into almost like Lord of the Flies, but it's like it with a little bit of a horror bent, and it just scared me as a kid. Now it's probably hokey as shit, but again at the time it was like, maybe we should, like, oh my god, my dream is like the counselors are captured at our camp. We can do whatever we want. I don't think I ever went to a sleepaway camp, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't think Angela is showing up. Like, I almost like Angela, I almost wish Angela would show up with some of these awful people in this movie, you know? And it just, I don't know. It's just my deep cut of like scariness. And I know like Eisner loves this movie called Fortress.
So that's on my list.
That's a good thing.
That means we can jump around. But I will say,
I've never seen it.
Me and Becca covered it for a show.
Yeah, this is the one that we covered for Deep Cuts, right?
No, we covered it on somebody else's show, the VHUS podcast. And he actually introduced us to it. But it's, well, I'll jump to it because the one you just mentioned.
Go for it.
The one you just mentioned before, I hadn't seen till last year. And Brian, who I do the other show with, we did a live show at the New Biv called Teenage Wasteland Movies. And that was one of his picks. So I watched it. And it does hold up still now because it is really, it's less probably scary, but it's more about factions and what could happen if the teenage mind was in control. But this has kind of got some similarities. So I actually planned a quick double, Australian double for people. One is totally outlandish that people won't believe me is horror. I was going to pair Fortress with Walkabout, because Walkabout is, to me, one of the best movies ever made, but it's actually quite a scary, it is literally about two kids, a band, and one girl who's probably almost 13, so she's just, it's a coming-of-age story for her. Her younger brother, the dad drives them into the middle of the desert and basically starts shooting at them, and you don't know what the fuck is happening. You're like, what is this movie? Then he blows up and dies, and now they're in the middle of the outback. And they're English, which makes it more like, you know, they don't know what the fuck they're in the outback for. You know, they're not even Australian. And they come across a young Australian Aborigine boy who's on his walkabout. So he's probably 16 or 15 going on his finding himself mission. And it's literally all just nature. And it's shot almost like a science fiction. It's like, you know, Picnic at Hanging Rock, where it's almost like a science fiction horror film, but it's these kids literally in peril. Will they survive this? And it gets some of the sexual tension stuff. So I just think this is a great movie to remind horror fans who will not seek it out necessarily that it actually kind of does touch your genre, especially if you're into the Ari Aster type of horror. But putting that with Fortress, which is one we hadn't seen before, and it's literally, if I had your Blu-ray company, you know, if I could put out a movie from that era, Fortress is the movie that it's insane that this movie still has no proper release. It's just, it's bonkers because it's so fucking entertaining. And it's Rachel Ward as a school teacher at one of these one room farmhouse schools that they would have where you'd have all the different ages of kids from very fucking little to like teenage boys. And she's teaching them in a remote Australia. And then it becomes fucking Last House on the Left. These dudes with scary fucking masks. One is Santa Claus. One is like Mickey Mouse, or like, what?
Like animals.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. They're just wearing these masks, and they break in. And they take the entire school hostage, and they take them out to the desert, and they put them in a cave, and they're going to basically ransom them off to try to get money back. But when they start fighting back, it becomes, like you were saying, kind of goes Lord of the Flies-ish with the kids. Mm-hmm. And we're talking real kids. That's what's so cool about it. Like, you have these little kids against guys who are, I mean, it's not for kids. This movie isn't, some of the guys are kind of rapey the way they talk, and it's kind of disturbing, but it's still this awesome, like once everyone and this teacher and these kids start to kind of go against them, it becomes so well done and kind of pretty realistic feeling for the kind of movie it is.
Good. Yeah. I remember being shocked by how kind of good and engaging this movie was. Like, Elric and I both really enjoyed
it. I think the guy did Dark Age, that big crocodile Australian film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I've seen that for sure.
Yeah, so he did that. Yeah. No, you would freaking love that. I have a copy of this I could send you straight away just so you see it, because I do think you'll really dig it.
I saw I watched the trailer literally today. Jason was like, this is it. I'm like, have I seen? Because, like, look, I love Rachel Ward. We all do.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I'm like, have I seen this? But we say this and like, it'll like Arrow will be releasing.
Probably. Yeah. By the time we finish the show.
That's why Elric and I always say that we don't have a problem saying like, I had to watch this bootleg or I had to watch this on YouTube or things like that. Because what we have discovered is if we can kind of, you know, get enough attention for a title, then other distributors.
Got to keep these things alive somehow. You know,
I completely agree.
Don't do that to Kids vs. Aliens or something that's available somewhere, you know, and could hurt someone. Right. But no, so those are Australia. So it's fortuitous that you brought up Fortress, because that was one of the first ones I was like, oh man, no one talks about that enough, and you know, hopefully get it back out there.
I love it.
What's definitely another one, Mark?
Well, I mean, do we go like, where are we at like in the thing, like we're like, we got like, I'll, do I go like the top, like my top two?
Yeah,
like
do whatever, and then I'll just throw out a couple.
I just rattled off my three altogether.
Gotcha. So obviously, look, and I'm 11 years old maybe, and I see this trailer and it's like these two, like, basically it's Lost Boys. And I was a Corey Haim. I was Sam from that movie. I wanted to be Frog Brothers, but I think I wasn't as cool, or at least I thought at the time. But I just remember you guys seeing this trailer and I'm like, they made this movie for me. And it's like, you know, like, cause I remember like I had an older sister, like I said, very young. I watched Salem's Lot. Cause remember that was a TV movie. And that was, so it was on during the day. Mm. And so I remember, again, Mark at the window, like the movie.
So scary, that part. Yeah.
So scary. So when I saw this, I'm like, fight, kids fighting back against these people. And it was just cool. And I remember I got to go to the theater. I remember it was R-rated. And I'll never forget, I probably went 5 or 6 times. And I, like, my parents were so cool. Like, they went every time. And finally, like, the teller was like, I remember him here. Like, it's fine. Like, they're like, can we leave him? You know? Yeah. And I think that movie changed. Like, it was just one of those, like, I would not be in this business without that movie. Mm-mm. And
I love those. They're just the best.
It still holds up. Like, my kids watched it, you know, it's just cool. And it just, again, it really is. And like the montage at the end of them going and getting the holy water, the garlic, the steaks. I'm like, this is on, man. This is the main event. Like a wrestling, to go back to wrestling, like they're about to go fight these dudes at the end of the movie. And it's just, I don't know. I think it's still, I love, love, love that movie.
And I still have a lot in common with Jason Patrick from this movie.
Of course.
I love the dead air. I want crickets under that. That's just,
really? No,
hey, I have curly hair.
I had a poster of this on my wall when I was a kid. Because the vampires were sexy, and I don't even think I really understood that yet, but I had the biggest crush. Kiefer Sutherland and Brooke, I can't remember.
McAllister.
Brooke McAllister, yeah, he played not Marco.
He was Paul.
He was Paul.
No, Dwayne was Billy Worth, went on to do Body Snatchers with the Abel Ferrara one, and obviously our good friend Alex Winter was Marco.
Marco.
And that is one of the scariest scenes in Body Snatchers, too, with the kid. That's that one scene with the mom. It's one of the scariest.
Great call.
Because if you look at individual scenes, you got that. You got the brood attack on the kids in the brood, which in the school, which is one of the most insane scenes ever filmed. There's just so many if you just look at individual scenes. But yeah, what's your last one? And then I'll rattle off.
Well, I think it's the GOAT. It's the Monster Squad. I mean, Fred Decker, thank you for like literally, like that is literally every WrestleMania, Lost Boy, Universal Monster Kid, like all into one. And like, I just think the world of that movie. And I still like one of my favorite lines ever is Rudy, who we all wanted to be the cool guy. And he's walking out and like, they're like in peril, like y'all think they're going to die. And he just fucking shows up like cooler than fucking cool. And he goes, I'm in the goddamn club, aren't I? Yeah. And he goes and kills. I'm like that again. I'm how long ago is that? 30 years, whatever, 30 years. I remember that line. Like just I'm like that, like he saved the day. Like, and then all of, you know, I wanted to be Sean, I think was the lead. Like that was me. We were all that kid, you know? And I just think that like still to this day. And like, I know I always say every time Fred's like, shut the fuck up, Mark. Like, and every time I see him, I go, I just don't care. Like, and I love Night of the Creeps as well.
I love it. Night of the Creeps I saw first actually between them, but, and I love that one. Yeah.
He just, that to me, like I, again, like I, that smell that I always say, like to capture, like he caught it in a bottle for me.
I love Michael Baldwin in Phantasm. I think that's one of my favorite, like, kid performance, or he's almost a teen, obviously, but like, just
That's a good call. That's a great call.
He's still younger. I mean, like, in the '80s, we identified teens as young adults, because if we look at something like Nightmare on Elm Street, I mean, it was all 20 somethings. And so to see an actual teen in that does not feel like the rest of the '80s.
He could have been in the Monster Squad. He could have been like a friend of theirs. A couple years later, he's in Phantasm. Yeah. He's great. Yeah. I'll just read all, I mean, again, these are all films people know. Look, I think Alice, Sweet Alice is one of the most effective.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a kid in peril, and also unusual because they're also the suspect, you know, for a lot of the film, which is super interesting. And adults are getting fucked up in this movie, too. But it's also one of these weird, there's a couple of movies I was thinking about where they're made in, this one's made in 76, but it's set in 61. And that was pretty unusual. Like, period piece horror was always a little like, oh, weird that you'd make that choice. But Alfred Soul kills it because it's like, you know, all about communion. And, you know, her younger sister is brutally murdered. And then you've got just the scenes with her, the one creepy neighbor. You're constantly on edge in that movie. And it's actually disturbing. Like, it's a movie that holds up today as an adult, as scary as it was when you were young. You know, it will fuck you up.
I was too scared. I honestly, like, as a video store kid, that I couldn't even touch the box. It was too scary. Yeah. Like, that again, I remember that, you know, and I think we released it at Anchor. I released it at Anchor Bay. I know I did. And, but even then, I was like, was it Alfred Soul, right?
Alfred Soul.
And, like,
yeah.
I don't think I started as a kid. I think I started as a teen. And, like,
I don't think I did either. Yeah, I think later. I think it was later too.
Yeah. And
great call, though.
But, you know, again, those ones are creepy. And not my official pick, but because we talked about so much, but in a similar way, the other one that's like that time wise is Reflecting Skin, because it's like made in 1990, but set in the 50s in a almost like a Lynchian world. Doesn't even feel like real America, but it's such a unsettling freaking movie. It doesn't all necessarily work on all levels, but man, you watch, if you're looking for something to pair with that one, watch Reflecting Skin. I just find that to be one of those films that gets under your skin. But I wanted to mention a total deep cut for this show. It's something I'd mentioned years ago on Pure Cinema. And just because I think people, and I think you guys would dig it. It's called The Window, and it's film noir, like straight film noir. It's 1949. Pretty lesser known film noir. And I happened to catch it on TCM one night. And it is one of the best kid in peril movies ever. It is this actor, which has a bit of a sad story at the end of it, called Bobby Driscoll, one of the best kid performance. It is kind of like Rear Window. It opens up and it's way too hot in Manhattan. And his parents are, you know, kind of indifferent to him. So he decides he will sneak out onto the rails to sleep out there because it's so hot. But then he notices the neighbor below him. He witnesses a murder. And you know, so it's pretty standard. But like, I'm watching this movie, and there's scenes like where somebody picks the kid up and slaps him right across the face, like the most violent thing I've ever seen to a child in a movie. Like, it just felt so fucking real. Like, and they're killers. They're like, we're gonna come back here and we're gonna fucking murder you because of what you saw. Like, it becomes that kind of movie, and it's really tense. It's really short. It's one of those that's super atmospheric. And I remember it ended, and I looked up the kid because I was like, who is this kid? He's so good. And it's the saddest thing I've ever looked up on the internet in my life. It was one of those things you regretted knowing, which is his name is Bobby Driscoll. He did a little thing called Peter Pan. He's the voice of Peter
Pan. Oh my God. I wrote an article about this kid.
And then he fell into drugs, and then he died in a pauper's grave, unmarked grave, is where he rests to this day. The guy who was Peter Pan is died in a, he was in one of those, like when you watch Wolfen in those tenement house, that his body was discovered by children playing in a tenement house. And when you read that and you watch a movie like this and you realize he's Peter Pan, your brain just is like, it's insane. You know, that trajectory is just so fucking sad. But this is just a cool, you know, I know it's super deep cut because it's more of a film noir, but I do think like people might be like, whoa, if you're into this kind of thing, this kid gives one of those performances. And then if we were doing teens, and I'm not going to go any further, but if we were doing teens, I think the greatest movie, and I don't like to say I like to see a remake, but Battle Royale is fucking good.
Great call.
Oh,
like,
great.
That is a movie where the kids are in peril, but they're also in peril with each other. It's school systems. It's Takeshi Kitano's running around. It is an amazing movie. And it's one of the few movies. I know Hunger Games is kind of a similar theme, but not tone. The tone of this is so dark, you know.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's really one of the best post 2000. It's 2000. It was made in, but just amazing.
When was that made?
That was 2000.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
It was funny because again, talk about Anchor Bay. We try. Ironically, Anchor Bay ended up, after I left, did do the box set, I believe. But we would call, like Jay Douglas would call every day, like to certain people. Like, and remember, he worked with, whoever the Beyond guys were, like Sylvester Stallone's kid was a part of the company, like Sage. Murawski, Rob Murawski, yeah, Sage.
And oh, Grindhouse Releasing, yeah.
Grindhouse, yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, he'd be like, how can we get this? And they're like, they won't fucking do it. They won't, like, it was banned. It was literally banned from coming here, and which is crazy if you think about it.
That's so cool, though.
But we had to see it. Yeah. So a great call on that. That's a great, great call.
Yeah, we'll have you back someday, and we'll do Teenagers.
Teenagers in Peril.
I know, because I had to go like Fright Night, but I get that, like, Charlie's too old. You know, yeah. But like I said, like, but there's other stuff, like, not it's not horror, but like Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, dude, like, that was huge for me. The Cloak and Dagger.
I try to tell people about that movie to
so good
all the time.
Yeah, I was thinking the Disney films of the 80s, The Something Wicked This Way Comes, which Disney, but then The Watcher in the Woods, those ones were definitely big for me.
I actually, it's funny, Disney let Anchor Bay have a couple movies and we got those out of there because they were like, these are too scary for our Disney audience.
It's true. I bought the fancy black hole Blu-ray that they did a couple of years ago, and they only made that available through the Disney Movie Club. Like, I joined the Disney Movie Club just to get that disc. And then you have to buy, like, it's set up the way that, like, the ones used to be in the 80s where, like, you get 6 discs for free, but then you bust buy 5 more at club prices. And they're, like, ridiculously expensive. Right. Disney is still operating under that for their Movie Club. But I did it just to get that black hole.
But this all proves, I think, that as long as we have Kinder Trauma movies and kid horror, will always have horror fans, because I think that's where the starting point, and then they grow up to be fans of harder stuff and will never go away as long as you're still scaring people when they're young and disturbing them. Definitely. You know,
it just, like, Stranger Things proves the point. Yeah. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely.
It's the best one.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Yeah. This has been an absolute pleasure, and we will have you back again soon. And I look so forward to your book recommendations. Like, I binged Riley Sager all summer because you had recommended them.
They're just fun summer reads. So, like, you know, and then it's every, like, we need to do this. Then, like, Robert Downey Jr. options. Like, I'm like, all right, never mind.
At least I read The Lake House on a plane, and I think it was probably while I was shooting Elevator Game. I had read it on a plane, and then
House Across the Lake.
And I ended up going to the bookstore in Winnipeg, and I bought like 5 more, and it's all I read.
They're good. They're fun read. Like, yeah, I like that Home Before Dark that he did, because there was some scenes I'm like, I'm kind of creeped out right here. Yeah. You know, like, good for him.
Yeah, some good stuff in there. But anyways, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, guys.
To our listeners at home, if you just need more of our deep cuts, you can find us on our Patreon show, Deep Cuts, where we will be definitely dropping some more titles super soon. I just got some fun Polizia Tetsky box sets I'm excited to dive into. And I know Elric has some fun titles on the way as well. So please find us over there. Otherwise, we will be back in 2 weeks for Switcheroo.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll switcheroo that on you.
Oh, you would. You would do that. The Colors of the Dark podcast is a Fangoria production. Producers and co-hosts are Rebecca McKendry and Elric Kane. Executive producers are Tara Ainsley and Abby Gould. Associate producer is Jessica Soff of Amir. Sonic branding by Michael Rodriguez. And, of course, our amazing sound engineer, Ernie Hurtado.